Well, all over Wisconsin, people work to remove invasive woody plants and restore prairies and wetlands with more diverse native flora. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about the important work individuals and groups are doing to protect native habitat. And a couple of guests for you. Mackenzie Manicky is a conservation biologist with the Wisconsin DNR focused on terrestrial invasive plants. Mackenzie is a facilitator of the Wisconsin Invasive Species Council, organizer of the council's annual Invasive Species Action Awards. Mackenzie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Larry. Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us today is one of this year's award winners, Jason Granberg, invasive plant specialist, project coordinator for the Wisconsin DNR's Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation. And Jason, welcome to you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Larry.
And I hope you'll join in. You, how are you sharing the battle with invasive species? Do you need advice for maybe getting rid of your buckthorn or garlic musters, or maybe help identifying what an invasive species is and isn't? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Mackenzie, let's start with you. June is Invasive Species Action Month. Why is it important this time of the year to draw attention to the spread of invasive plants?
So June is a beautiful month. People are out and about, out on boats or out hiking in natural areas. And so it's a great time of year to start thinking about how to prevent the spread of invasive species. So Action Month is a great time to think about cleaning off your equipment after you're recreating outdoors, making sure you're not spreading seeds or other invasive organisms from site to site, so you can help preserve those places that you recreate in the long term.
And you help facilitate the Wisconsin Invasive Species Council, and you organize the council's annual Invasive Species Action Awards. What impact are the people receiving these awards having on protecting our native habitat?
So we're really humbled and I'm grateful and proud of all of the nominations that we receive every year. There's a lot of, all the nominations are always fantastic. It's always a challenge to narrow it down for our winners. So we're really lucky in that way. But overall, a lot of the winners have spent a lot of time, a lot of effort in a variety of ways on efforts to educate or remove invasive species or otherwise prevent their spread. So they're often leaders in their areas, yeah.
Yeah, and well, Jason, let's turn to you. This month you received one of the awards for playing a sort of a, I would say, behind-the-scenes role coordinating statewide efforts to fight invasive species. What specifically do you do to support those efforts?
So like you said, I'm behind the scenes. I do lots of support work. Things that I do is I find grant opportunities. I write and administer grants. And then we use those funds. We disperse them to some of our DNR properties, like our state natural areas, and then also to one of our primary partners, which are the Cooperative Invasive Species Management Areas. These are NGOs that help out with invasive species topics. I also do things. I work with databases. I compile maps. I work with climate change analyses to figure out what new species we're going to encounter in the future. And then I also do some other administrative things too. We're working on a rule revision to NR40, which is a Wisconsin Invasive Species Council project, and we're working to revise that species list.
Well, that's a lot. You're doing a lot there, and you're definitely deserving of this award. I had some callers online with some questions that relate to invasive species, and let's go to Glenn in Waupaca. What's on your mind, Glenn?
Well, thank you for taking my call. You know, it seems like a futile attempt fighting these invasive species such as garlic, mustard, and buckthorn. And we fight the garlic mustard. On our half-mile trail we have mowed, we pick as much as we can along the trail, but it seems such a futile attempt. Is there anything that we can do to fight the buckthorn in our yard and also the garlic mustard?
There's some interesting things that are coming out with research regarding garlic mustard. One idea is that with some of these garlic mustard patches, if they're in the area for long enough, they create an environment around themselves that make them more susceptible to pathogens. And so for these large populations, they tend to, sometimes they'll die out on their own. There's also interesting information about a biocontrol effort to look at different aphid species and how they can impact garlic mustard. One of them is called grenade aphid. They look like the World War I pineapple grenades. And so people are watching to see what kinds of these native aphids that we have that will best control those on their own. With buckthorns, that's going to be a bit more of a difficult challenge because of how prolific they are in the state. One of the best things that we have for these species that are so widespread is to find locations where they're first emerging in the landscape, try and deal with them as an early detection species, and then try to work back towards a large source population. But unfortunately, without a lot of finance and effort and labor, it's hard to control buckthorns.
Yeah. And when they get big, when they get large, they're tough to get out, for sure. I was looking online at some mechanical removers, things that a person can use by himself or herself to kind of pull them out by the roots.
Yeah, there's an interesting tool called a weed wrench. So you're using physics to really have a lever that's below the surface of the soil, and you can rip the whole thing out.
Oh my goodness me. Glenn, there you go. Thank you. Phyllis in the town of Dunn, we'll go to you.
Hi. So I'm from out east, and there my hometown is just covered with lesser celandine. And then this year, or actually a couple years ago, I saw it in my lawn here. And this year I covered up three patches with, I pulled them out, and then I covered up with cardboard. And, so far, so good. But is lesser celandine much around here? I haven't seen it anywhere around here except for in my yard.
So that's a great question. So lesser celandine is actually considered a prohibited species under the Wisconsin's invasive species rule. And prohibited species are those that exist in small isolated populations in the state or they're not yet present. So they're a real focus for early detection and rapid response efforts. So if you do find lesser celandine or other prohibited species on your land, we ask that you try to control them so they don't spread further and cause further impacts. Early detection and rapid response is the best way to get a handle on invasive species before they get out of hand, like garlic mustard or buckthorns.
Celandine. Okay. Phyllis, it sounds like you've got a good start on getting it under control, and you really need to do it. So good for you. And Helen in Big Bend, your turn. Hi, Helen.
We have some golden oyster mushrooms, and I think I saw some place where they are invasive, but we really enjoy eating them. And I was wondering how we should care for them, if they're going to spread or if they're going to be a nuisance, or and how late into their season can you eat them?
Oh, well, I don't know. Mackenzie, do you know anything about, are they invasive, golden oyster mushrooms?
I don't know much about mushrooms in general. I don't believe there are any invasive mushrooms listed under the rule, but I would have to check to be sure on that. Jason, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I don't have any other information about the golden oyster mushrooms or if they are invasive in our area.
Yeah, I've never heard of them being called invasive either, but of course I'm no expert at all. So there you go, Helen. Thank you for calling. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, email to talk@wpr.org. Another professional award winner. I want to get back to that for a few minutes. We've got a lot of them. Jeb Barzin was a professional award winner. And Jeb's been a guest on this program many times to talk about Eagles and all kinds of other things. And I'm glad to see that he's also, Jason, what is he works with farmers, doesn't he?
Yeah, I was looking up some information about his program and what he's been doing. And so it looks like it's part of a some ecological restoration to help with fostering native plants around potato farming areas.
Very cool. Very cool. He's got a healthy grow program, I think is what he calls it. And it was cool for me to see him getting this award because I know he's done so much work, especially with eagles and with other birds as well here in the state. John in Appleton has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Hi, this is very timely because I have a small prairie I'm trying to establish. You know, it's like maybe 10 by 30 or 15 by 30. And I was just digging out fleabane today, which I don't want in there. And then I also noticed I'm having some, it looks like keyed as being Timothy grass. And, you know, it's got like a long cylindrical seed head. It's like a giant pencil eraser. And I'm just wondering if that's going to take over. If I don't dig it out, will it take over my little prairie?
So as far as the Timothy grass goes, I'm not super familiar with it, but I have had one question about it in the past. And I did a little research on it a while ago, and it seems like it's more of a problem in grasslands out west. But I haven't seen much about it being an issue in Wisconsin. Or Jason, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, also with Timothy grass, I agree. It's more of a western rangeland kind of problem. And with your prairie that you're starting to establish, just remember that prairies are these intermediate disturbance ecosystems. So occasional disruptions like using prescribed fire will help knock back non-native plants and then also help your locally adapted native plants to thrive.
Yeah. John, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, we are having some fun here talking about some award winners and invasive plants as well with our two guests today, Mackenzie Manicky. Mackenzie Manicky is a conservation biologist with the DNR. Jason Granberg is an invasive plant specialist and project coordinator for the DNR's Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation. Questions, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Taking a look at invasive plants with our two guests today and also talking about some honors and awards some of them have received for the work that they've done in our state to remove invasive plants. Our guest, Mackenzie Manicky, conservation biologist with DNR, Jason Granberg, is invasive plant specialist and project coordinator for the DNR. So wonderful to have them with us. I did want to mention some other winners from the event. John Mariani has, I guess, single-handedly removed thousands of exotic invasives to restore, it was about 60 acres of oak and savanna near Burlington.
Yeah, that's correct. It seems like he's also started his own landscape design business and has started educating and showing others on the importance and versatility of using native plants in landscaping as well. Native plants are a great addition to your landscaping, and they coexist well together and don't get out of hand in the same way that invasives can.
Yeah, absolutely. Marlene in Wales, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Marlene.
Hi. I've got an area in my yard that, with some advice from a local nature center in years past, we got out some of the real invasive things like buckthorn and burdock. And I did plant a few natives that I bought through them, but they no longer have that service. And I'm trying to figure out who I can go to look at this area and say, yeah, oh, look, those trilliums are really propagating nicely. Let's not plant something near them, you know, that's going to give them too much shade or not enough or whatever. Like, how do I create a wild native flower bed in a woodland setting?
That's a really great question. There are lots of resources on the DNR website. We have a Plant Native Plants page that has a variety of resources there for restoring natural areas and also landscaping resources. And on that page, there are a couple of lists. One of them is a list of restoration contractors that's regional, so you can find people in your area. And there's also a list of native plant nurseries as well that you can find there. So they would have great information, I'm sure.
Yes, they would indeed. So go to the DNR website.
Yeah, on the DNR website, and then in the search bar, enter in plant native plants, and it should be the first thing that pops up there. And like I said, lots of great resources.
Yeah, Marlene, there you go. Thank you. Susan in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Susan.
Hello. I have had increasing growth of thistles over the years. I used to have a few thistles, and I would try to dig them out, or I would try Roundup. But nothing ever worked. And I understand there is some kind of method of destroying thistles permanently, but I don't know what it is or where to find it.
Do you know what, is it a Canada thistle?
Well, it has a purple flower.
Yeah. So we have lots of different thistle species that are in Wisconsin, and they will all typically respond to the same control activities. One of our favorite resources that we use and we reference and send people to is, it's the Renz Weed Science Lab. So R-E-N-Z, Weed Science. And there, within that page, there are lots of different tools. One of them is their invasive plant management fact sheets. And that can give you an idea of what kinds of herbicides are going to be most effective towards controlling your thistles.
Yeah, Canada thistles are really awful. I think they are very, very hard to get rid of. Some are relatively easy, but I'm thinking Susan may have some Canada thistles there, and those are difficult. So you might want to take a look online at Canada thistle and see if that's what you've got, Susan. And there are probably heavier duty control measures for those as well. Kyle in Winneconne, your turn. Hi, Kyle.
Hello, Larry and guests. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have these ornamental bushes in my front. I recently used an app to identify them, and it says they're like Japanese barberry, and it says they're invasive. I was wondering if you guys could confirm that or know anything about them.
Japanese barberry, are they invasive? Okay.
Yes, Japanese barberry is an invasive plant that we have. We've got common barberry and Japanese barberry. One of the ways that you can tell them apart is a common barberry will have three little spines, and the Japanese barberry will have one. And then if you're also looking at the leaf, it kind of looks like a ping pong paddle. It's kind of oval-shaped. One of the important reasons why you would want to have your barberry be controlled, not only can they cause issues for the natural areas, but they can also be hosts to rodents, which can then carry ticks, and those ticks can then carry Lyme disease.
So how do we go through that again? How do I identify which one is the bad one?
Well, they're both bad.
Yeah.
So common barberry and Japanese barberry are both bad. Common barberry will have three little thorns, while Japanese barberry will only have one, okay. And they will have a similar leaf shape.
Okay. Kyle, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Mona in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Mona.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to talk about our attempts at getting rid of garlic mustard in our backyard. I think we've nailed it, I hope. But I want your opinion and your guest's opinion. What we did is the last couple of years, we've had our gardener pull all the garlic mustard she can get to, and then she puts corn gluten meal on top of them so they don't spread any more seeds, and then she covers them with either burlap sacks or cardboard, and then we put about 3 inches of mulch on top. Do you think that's going to work?
Yeah, I mean, pulling is one of the really effective ways to start getting garlic mustard off of your landscape. And I think that covering it or smothering it in that manner that you described is also going to help prevent seedlings from coming up in the future. So hopefully you've ensured a little bit longer term effective control on that.
Yeah, I think that's sounded pretty good to me. Mona, thank you for calling. Dennis in Afton, Minnesota, will give you a chance now. Hi, Dennis.
Yeah, hi. Thanks very much, guests, Larry, and everyone who works for WPR. I appreciate it. I saw a publication produced by the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources a while back claiming some indications of, through research, some success with taking buckthorn and cutting it off up at 4 foot high, and then stripping all the branches off. I'm wondering if you have any success or awareness of that approach. And secondly, in our neighborhood, we've got a patch of Japanese knotweed, and we're putting together a team effort here, hopefully to come up with a non-chemical approach to we have to deal with it. So thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. So buckthorn, cutting it off 3 feet up and then stripping all the bark off of it?
I have not heard of that as a control method, cutting it up at 4 feet tall and then taking the limbs off. So that's interesting. It's something I'll have to look into. But cut stump methods, usually cutting the stem a few inches above the ground and then treating the stump with some herbicide is a really common way for controlling woody species and buckthorn.
Yeah, it needs to be done. I think that application needs to be done right away as you make the cut.
That's the most effective way. People also do what's called girdling. So you can take a ring of bark off across the circumference of the stem, and then you can leave it like that. Otherwise, you can treat it with a little bit of herbicide as well to ensure a little bit better results, too.
What about Japanese knotweed? Dennis mentioned that.
Typically, with Japanese knotweed, what we found is that mechanical control really doesn't work, and people have had concerns about herbicides. That's understandable. But with some species, herbicide may be the best option that we have available. If you want to limit the amount of herbicide that you use, there's a tool for Japanese knotweed control, and it's a stem injector. And so what you're doing is that the knotweed has these hollow tubes that are kind of stacked together, and the stem injector will, you can inject it into that, and then you can add a small amount of herbicide. So you're not doing a foliar spray, you're not aerosolizing the herbicide. You're doing a small directed application to those nodes.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it, and certainly a safer way for the other plants. I should mention on Garden Talk coming up on Friday, we're going to be talking about native plants. Native plants have come up a bit here today in this last time period here, and we'll talk natives and pollinators on Friday's program as well. So how are these, Mackenzie, how are the winners or recipients, I should say, of the awards, how are they honored?
So each year, each June, the Wisconsin Invasive Species Council and partners host the Invasive Species Action Awards. The location moves around the state, so we have an awards ceremony where each recipient is given an awards plaque. the plaques are very interesting and cool in that they're made from wood that was taken from ash trees that had to be felled due to emerald ash borer, which is an invasive insect in Wisconsin. So it's kind of tied all together in the invasives world. But we have these cool plaques, and we have a nice ceremony, and the council congratulates and thanks all of the recipients for their efforts.
Yeah, and there were, what, how many were there this year? There were
13 this year, yes.
13 recipients. Great to have them recognized. I looked at their work, and it looks absolutely amazing, and it tired me out just to look and read about all the work that they did. Mackenzie, Jason, thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate it very much, and we'll look forward to another visit from you. Mackenzie Manicky of the DNR, Jason Granberg of the DNR as well, our guests. And thank you very much for listening, and stay with us. Lots more in store here on Wisconsin Public Radio News. I'm Larry Mueller.